Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with one last Survivor preview before we get into the new season, and here to talk about the Island of the Idols cast, all 20 new cast members, one more time to tell us their character type predictions. Please welcome the great Angie Kant. Angie, how are you?
I am doing great, Rob. Fitted in just under the wire. I'm here. I made it. I'm so excited about this cast and this season. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, very nice to get to catch up a little bit before the Island of the Idols kicks off on Wednesday night. 90-minute episode coming up, so we're going to go through everything with this cast. Angie is going to tell us, based on their character profile, which category of her famous Kant's type categories each player fits in, and through this Angie system. What's the right terminology?
Methodology.
Perhaps? Yes. Okay. Yes. Through the methodology. Can I say rubric?
If you want.
Yeah. Would I be wrong? Would I sound dumb?
I don't even know.
Okay. The methodology will then kick out predictions, and Angie will tell us how likely each person is to go further into the game based on their character type. And it's a fun exercise. This is for entertainment use only, right?
Yeah. No, this is not spoiler material. It's not nearly that accurate.
Okay. All right. So that's what we're going to do here today. Angie, how have you been?
I've been doing really well. Just, you know, working and, being a mom. Just regular stuff like that. When, you know, one of my kids just started high school, the other one middle school. It's busy. It's hard being a parent.
Okay, as your girls are growing up, are you able to project them into which character type they will grow up to be, or it's only if they're on Survivor?
Different countries sometimes mess with the system. People are constantly asking me what character type the Australians are, and there's way too many of them for one, and their culture is very different. But
you don't have a heroic footy player?
That's the thing. You need like 20 of them need to be like professional athlete character types. But no, in terms of my kids, Poet is a G.I. Jane and Ocean is a Chelsea Handler for sure.
Okay. All right. I have to work on that and projecting Dominic and Anthony. Maybe I'll as we go along here, I'll be able to figure that out. Okay. All right. So, Angie, a little more background for people. We always have new people listening to the podcast. Could you explain what exactly your character type system is and how you developed it?
It's essentially a methodology by which I attempt to categorize players into 26 set types based on shared personality traits and other demographics. I then compare the results of how each category player did in the game. And that's in an effort to predict how a new season will unfold based only on the pre-game interviews and bio information. So it's a very general overview. And players often do outplay their character type as well as underplay it. And by that, I mean, sometimes people do far better than the average player performance does, or they do far worse than the average player performance. So what I like about it is it really, with a very general brush, it paints a picture of the types of game behaviors we're going to see in each player. And to that extent, it's pretty accurate. So it can be a really fun way to do your draft picks. It can be a really fun way to try and add a new element of analysis when you're reviewing the players before the game.
Angie, I'm very interested to know how the Edge of Extinction impacted your results. Did you take the information of when people got voted out originally, or did Chris Underwood winning the game, did that really boost his archetype, or did you count him as two players? How did that all work?
Honestly, I still haven't really figured out what to do with Chris.
None of us has.
Yeah, exactly, right? And the crazy thing is you know, like, Chris was one of my favorite players going into the game. I thought he had tremendous potential. He went out pretty much exactly when the system said he would go out. And then he came back in. And I don't know whether, like, I am counting it as a win for that character type, because I think that's only fair. But at the same time, it's, I don't know. I mean, if it's a, if it's a mechanic that they're going to continue to use, then the system needs to somehow absorb that and create some sort of model based on that. But honestly, after one season with just one player falling into that category, I don't know what the hell to do with them.
Okay.
But overall, Edge of Extinction, the system did really well. I had an accuracy rate of like 66%, which is very high.
Okay. How do you determine accuracy rate?
I've come under some criticism on how wide of a net that I cast. So essentially, my accuracy rate means that if I come within about three spots of where they actually went out to when I said they would go out, then I count that as like 1 point. And mm-hmm. then I just base my, it's very, very basic. But the reason why I kind of cling to that is because the season where we did that test, where we had a bunch of casuals kind of submit their boot order list yes. based on the bios, we had accuracy rates as low as 15% and as high as 75%. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed is that my system consistently ranges between about 40 and 60% every single year. So to me, that tells me that this isn't just kind of wild luck. It's not blind. It's not all over the place. So some years are better than others, but you know, for example, that this in Edge of Extinction, 12 of the players who went out finished relatively closely to where the system said they would finish, and two of the top three,
okay,
were supposed to be in the top three. So, and also remember this is funny. I was using both returning player data and new player data for yes. the same character type last year, which was the Chelsea Handler.
Yes.
So I had Aubrey going out second and Victoria finishing seventh. And you thought that was wildly unfair. mm-hmm. And then Aubrey ended up going out fourth and Victoria finished sixth. So that's why I say that stuff. Hey. It's not me. It's the system. That's just the
as
way
an
it
Aubrey
goes.
Fan, I can say that it's still unfair.
It is. Whatever. They
should have kept her around longer. And what are you going to do?
Yeah, but that's the way it goes for the yeah. returning Chelsea Handlers. Like you have one shot at it, and then you're done. Yeah.
Okay, Angie, can we share your Google Doc? Is that okay? Could I give out a link to this, or is
yes,
this for internal
absolutely.
Use only?
No, I do try and update the spreadsheet every year, and it is literally the spreadsheet that I use. It has all the different tabs in it for the things that I use. I track the top five of every season so I can see who's most likely to be a good goat to bring to the end, as well as who's most likely to beat you if you take them to the end. And also it has the list of players for this current season, and you can see where I said they're going to go out, and you can kind of track it as you go along.
So I'm going to go ahead and make a link to your Google Doc here, and we'll make that at robhasthewebsite.com/caunce39. That's CAUNCE 39 if you want to follow along with Angie's notes or review them after the podcast. Okay, Angie, anything else left to set up, or can we go through the list starting at the person who the system believes will be the first one out on Wednesday night?
I do want to briefly talk about the casting changes this year, because I am in particular getting a lot of questions about this, about how the casting management has kind of changed for Survivor for this season.
With Lynn Spillman no longer being in charge of casting, that the system is going to be in flux?
Yes, there was a disruption. I have noticed it very much. So that is something I wanted to draw attention to very, very briefly. The changes this season that I've noticed is that the whole cast seems to be, on the whole, a lot smarter. There's no airheads, no flakes, no duds, no pompous douchebags. The diversity is a lot more, there's higher volume of a diverse cast. It's an older group. Mm-hmm. It's a more athletic group. And I'm no expert on this matter, but I didn't see a single fake boob, which means someone, I think, is looking for the right stuff in the players coming.
But I had heard that when Jeff Probst got more involved with casting, it was the end of the show.
Well, apparently not, because I'm very curious to see how this goes. It seems
people overreacted to something?
You would think that, you know, like, it seems shocking that they would do that. But the reality TV fans are not the most measured of groups that I've come across in my life.
Okay.
So.
All right.
All right. Perfect.
Let's dive in. Okay. Angie, who has the misfortune of being the latest person to be a first one out on Survivor?
Okay. In 20th place is our Meredith Grey, who is Karishma Patel.
Okay.
So this time, I know I'm a little slow on the uptake with this time. This time I've actually taken one survivor name that I'm going to say at the end of every character type and say that character's name so that you understand what this character type is all about. So the Meredith Grey is the Francesca Hoagie.
Hmm. Okay.
So this type is the 30-something professional woman who is too smart for her own good. She's intense and she's sharp and she overplays too early and she drives everyone crazy with excessive gaming and paranoia.
Okay.
So as for Karishma, Russia called and they want the red flags back. To me, it's always a bad sign when pre-game when someone says that their strategy is to be the complete opposite of their nature. And that's what she was kind of coming across saying to me in her interviews with Wiggler. She said she has an aggressiveness and a dominance in her real life and she loves attention and she's going to have to stuff all that back down her throat. And it's just not going to happen because... As you know, like this game, I think Malcolm was the one on one of the podcasts that was saying, like, this game completely tears you down to nothing but your most basic self. And you can't hide it from anyone. You can't pretend to be anything that you're not. It's very difficult when you're tired and hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a good idea for Karishma to be aware and to check herself as much as she can. But I don't think she'll be able to keep the leash on herself for 39 days. And I don't think she's going to be able to last a day before she's going to go off telling people what's what.
Angie, who's been the most successful Meredith Grey in the history of the show?
That, I believe. Let me just double check. I believe.
Or one of the most successful Meredith Greys.
That would be Sarah Lucina, I believe.
Sarah Lucina, yeah. And well, yeah. She it took her two times to before yeah, she could win. She's not the most successful Survivor fantasy football player. I can tell you that right now. I play in a fantasy league with her, but
yeah, and she sucks.
I didn't say that. I'm just saying that she's better at Survivor. She's an incredible Survivor player. So that she is...
Laurel actually did really well for herself. I don't think Laurel gets enough credit.
Okay. So for Laurel, but I wouldn't necessarily say that Laurel was somebody who was really outspoken. In fact, if people were going to knock Laurel, it was that she was not outspoken enough.
Yes, but Laurel was a rap fan and she knew she was a Meredith
fan. So
is Karishma. Not to be this.
So is Karishma. Yeah.
I know. So, like, I'm rooting for her. I don't dislike her. I'm just afraid that that she's going to have trouble.
Okay. Well, I think that she is going to be around for more than just 3 days this season. So, I think that the system is off to a shaky start here so far, Angie.
Well, the modern day Meredith Grey is doing much better. Like Angelina, Keeley, Laura, Sarah, but all the predecessors before them just did so much damage to the placement ranking that they haven't been able to recover yet. So the modern day Meredith Grey isn't necessarily the first boot, but old school Meredith Grey, watch out.
Okay. All right. Who's second person out? Who's following Karishma right out the door?
Right out the door next is our True Grit, which is Tom Laidlaw.
Your fellow Canadian, you're picking against him? That Angie, you're going to be the scourge of Canada.
Mm-hmm. I have lots to say about him being our first Canadian, too. So let me just give a bit of a background on the True Grit. So I'm calling this one the Terry Dietz. So True Grit is the older man who is a retired athlete or ex-military. He's usually the easiest member of the cast to categorize because you can do it from the first couple of lines of his bio. So, yes, Tom is Survivor's first Canadian citizen. Australia's Kel Gleeson was actually born in Canada.
It's very confusing now when you talk about Australia's Kel Gleeson. I'm like, hold on.
Like season two of American Survivor. Kel
Outbacks.
Was like, I was born in Canada, but it's okay, guys. I'm actually an American now. I'm like, thanks, Kel.
Mm-hmm. This is when he went out, too.
Yep. So it doesn't bode well. So Tom grew up on a dairy farm in Brampton. So just so you know, Brampton is just outside of Toronto, like 45 minutes. It's like just over there. A ton of people commute in from Brampton to work downtown. And today it's completely built up with subdivisions that have all been caught up in the crazy million-dollar housing boom. So I don't think there are any dairy farms that exist there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying that for some perspective. He didn't grow up in the middle of nowhere. It's bittersweet for me to have Tom as our first Canadian. And this is no offense to Tom at all, because he seems like a really, he seems like a hell of a guy. But first of all, he lives in America, and he has since he was drafted to the NHL when he was 20 years old. Second, he's a friggin' recruit, which is a complete slap in the face to a nation of diehards. Yeah, slap shot in the face, right? Like hockey teeth right in the face to a, you know, to all the Survivor fans in Canada, which are like a significant number on a like per capita basis. There are more Survivor fans in Canada than there are in the States. Not a single Canadian applicant made the cut, which if you've seen Big Brother Canada or Amazing Race Canada, you know it's not for lack of entertaining characters or strategic players. So that really burns my cheese. Mm-hmm. It's just laziness.
Burns your...
It burns my cheese. Clearly casting did not buy in on this Canadian idea and like threw it in for good measure. Do better, Survivor.
Okay. Well, how about this? Well, what if then he sort of opens the floodgates and then maybe not for season 40, but maybe for season 41, that maybe there's a lot of Canadian people ending up on the show because they see all the support that Tom Laidlaw had for these two episodes.
Well, I hope that's true. I mean, I was gullible enough to think that was actually what was going to happen this season. Like, I thought, oh, they're finally opening it up to an entire new country of applicants. You know, surely there'd be more than one. Anyway, no, in his defense, like what he will bring as a Canadian and based on his interview, I think he will bring more humility. This is for the True Grit character type, I mean. More humility, more inclusivity. He won't be laying down the law. He won't be talking down to people specifically. Yeah. He won't be talking down to women. He'll be positive.
Let's
and
hope
polite.
Not. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes they can be a little bit in your face with that stuff. But he doesn't know the game, which is, I think, in modern Survivor is a massive disadvantage. So he's really being set up to fail, both by his character type and his recruitism. So I think he may do better in this spot than this spot here, but I still doubt he makes the merge.
Hmm. Okay.
But at least he still has his Canadian accent, which is adorable.
All right. So you say that Tom Laidlaw could be the second person out. Who's the best True Grit?
That would be Tom Westman.
Tom Westman. Okay, another Tom. Won. Okay. Mm-hmm. Are you factoring in Rob and Sandra in terms of the character types that they like?
I am to a certain extent. There are three players that I have kind of noticed that I think will really benefit from being in contact with Rob and Sandra. I'm sure they all will to a certain extent, but there are three in particular that I think are really going to have a meeting of the minds and be able to be, you know, able to really pick up what they're putting down for them and potentially have a much stronger game. I don't think Tom will know who the hell they are, and I think he'll just shoot the shit with Rob over hockey and then, you know, have a beer and then say thanks, man, and leave.
Well, I don't think they have beers on Island of the Idols.
Well, I don't really know the setup. I don't know if it's like this grueling challenge you have to complete in order to just talk to them, or if it's more like meeting Cochrane on a cruise ship, you know?
Yeah, he might have had beers with Debbie. That's possible.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what I'm like. I don't know which one it is because,
hey,
you know, in the previews.
No beer here, Angie. Smart.
Well, in the preview, they're like, nothing here is free. I'm like, okay.
That's like, right.
What's the point then?
Sandra would know because she's the queen of couponing also.
She
queen stays
is.
Queen.
Mm-hmm. I love the way she has like,
unless
she's
it's
got
two,
a red
buy
shirt.
One, get one free.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. So let's go to the third person out of the game.
Okay.
Like last
18.
Season's winner.
Lady Gaga. Lauren Beck.
Okay.
She's all right. Our 29-year-old nanny from Glendale, California. So this character type is the Courtney Moon. The Lady Gaga is a female player who is not mainstream.
I feel like that the character types have not really advanced with Lady Gaga's career. I feel like she's very, very mainstream. She's really not that weird anymore.
No, she isn't. She isn't, but it's okay because the Lady Gaga isn't that weird anymore, and she's actually pretty. She's getting pretty strategically savvy too, so I'm okay with it. It's a little bit more in the shallow years of Lady Gaga.
Yeah, not poverty shallow.
No, but the most important thing to remember is that the Lady Gaga is like a no caller type of person, And I made Lauren the Lady Gaga simply because her job wasn't mainstream, and because she mentioned paying attention to the signs of the universe around her. Mm-hmm. But as character types go, Lauren is she seems to be a very strong player. She's a gamer, and her personality is like really on point. So I mean, an element of me, there was an element of me that wanted to make her the siren, believe it or not. Like, and that was too much of a stretch, so I didn't, but it's clear that this season is not being filled with a bunch of pinup girls who plan to, flirt and showmance mm-hmm. their way to the end. And it occurred to me that when you take away the flirty component of the siren, the most dominant trait is having an exceptional social game and charm. And that's definitely Lauren's strong suit. So
shallow.
I mean, if, yeah.
Parvati.
Parvati Shallow, the siren.
Yeah.
So if she was the siren, she would be going out in the 10th spot, right in the middle of the pack. So keep that in mind as we watch her. I'm not really sure if I got this one right or not. Like, maybe this is what the new siren looks like a married woman who wants a miniature potbelly pig and name it Mark. Who the hell knows? But I think she is a bright, shining star of this season, and I really love her. And my only concern for her
Didn't she want to name the pig Gabbana?
She was thinking of that, but then she thought it'd be cool to give it like a dude name like Steve.
Like Mark the Chicken?
Yeah, like Mark the Chicken. Okay. It was actually just me while listening to the podcast that I said, name it Steve. That's like a really cool, or Mike.
Hey.
But she, yeah.
So a star is Lauren. That's
For sure. I am worried that I'm for all the cast, not just Lauren, anyone that isn't like an Olympian, I'm really worried that they're going to be targeted early for not being athletic enough. Like the bar has been raised for athleticism this season to an ungodly level. So I'm really worried for, some really like relatively fit people might be really struggling out there.
Okay.
So,
all right.
But no, I like Lauren. I think she'll definitely do better than this spot here, but that was the character type I made her.
Okay. What about number 17?
Number 17.
17th place finisher.
Back by popular demand is the Crazy Cat Lady.
Crazy Cat Lady? Oh. Mm-hmm. Who was the last Crazy Cat Lady that we had?
That would be Katrina Radke. Before that, it was like so many seasons before that.
Katrina Radke.
Exactly. So Nora gets the illustrious spot for the Sioux Hawk of the character type system.
Okay, why do you say she's a crazy cat lady? Does she? First off, I like to refer to them as the eccentric female feline lovers of America. I never cross them.
No, they're a mighty group.
Yes,
they're very intense. So this is the intense, in her own world, often arrogant, loud woman who makes everyone uncomfortable. She can often be abrasive. She's not good at reading social signals. Mm-hmm. And OMG, Nora is so hyper. Mm-hmm. She talks a mile a minute without waiting for any feedback or input from the room. She was talking all over Josh when he was talking, trying to figure out his sentences for him, which is my biggest pet peeve. I was super struggling to listen to her, and I was like legitimately exhausted after her interview. So she just talks so much, so fast. She sounds like Philip Shepherd on hyperspeed. So there is no female specialist there, but there is this character type for the women. And honestly, I didn't pull the trigger on Debbie Wanner when I made her a tough old broad instead, and I've regretted it, and I'm not making the same mistake twice.
Will you ever go back and up and say, wait, I think I got this wrong in the preseason, or are you locked in?
Sometimes I do, but I have a lot of doubt. Honestly, it's hard for me to, I hate giving new players, bad reviews. I feel it every time I make someone the specialist or the crazy cat lady. And I always think, oh, what if I'm wrong? And Debbie made some pretty sick game moves and she was so fit. And I thought maybe not. But yeah, other times I will absolutely move characters. Like I moved Michaela because I believed Michaela was a G.I. Jane, and I didn't nail it when she first came out. And
Michaela Bradshaw, not Wingle?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Michaela. Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I think they're both G.I. Janes, come to think of it.
Oh! Yeah. Okay. I made her Delilah.
Gross!
Okay. All right.
So Nora is a stir-crazy health nut who claims to be very analytical and a real estate millionaire by her 20s, and I do not doubt this. I think that she has achieved everything that she says she has achieved. But what I gleaned from her interview is that she believes she can reinvent the wheel and see things that others can't be because she doesn't know the show. And I do know the show, and I'm telling you, I don't know how the hell she's going to be. She's not going to be the first boot out. Like, when people are tired and hungry and cold and Nora will not shut up, everyone's going to lose their minds.
Okay.
Plus, she's going to tell them how to do everything because she won't know any better. And, you know, as many a great survivor has told us on this very podcast, the most important thing to do as a player is to listen. And Nora can't. Like, Josh told her not to touch the table. Mm-hmm. It's a simple instruction, and she could not do it. In fact, she was banging the table for emphasis in her runaway train of a story. So I know you guys said she had potential, but holy crap, I just can't see it. So I think the system's being kind, putting her this far in. Honestly, I think she's first boot.
Angie, one of the things that I do think is fascinating about Survivor is that what sort of lessons can we apply from Survivor to the outside world and vice versa? So I think it's very interesting to see somebody who's been very successful in business outside of the world to be able to come in, and maybe she believes that, okay, well, because I've had success here, I'm going to naturally have success here and practice the same methodology on Survivor that has brought me success in the real world. And I always think that's fun to see how that's going to play out.
Yeah. Yeah, but sometimes it's believable. And sometimes, like, you look at someone like Janine from Australia Survivor, and you look at, because it's kind of the same character type in a way, and they're like polar opposites. So you can see Janine being able to walk in and potentially navigate a game that she might not know that well because of her business acumen. But Nora is just like, she really is just like a runaway train. Like, it's just, she's gone and she's not listening to anything. She's not considering anything. So I think she's going to have all kinds of crazy ideas, and everyone's going to be like, what the hell? Like, what can you do with that if you can't even like settle it down and have a back and forth with it? So I don't know.
Well, I'm here for crazy ideas. I'd like to hear crazy ideas.
She may be fine, but I highly doubt it.
Okay. Angie, the fifth person out of this season is going to be whom?
I can see your Periscope, Elaine Scott.
Oh.
So, yeah. And she is one of my absolute favorites. Good old Elaine here. I love her. So this is the Cass McKillen. So also known as the Lauren Rimmer, if that helps you understand the type as well. This is the smart older woman who sees through everyone's crap. Mm-hmm. So I think that she's everything that I hoped for in this character type and more, honestly. Like, I love her. She's funny. She's sensible. She's strong. And overall, I think that she's going to do really great. This character type must have a strong social game if they're going to survive, because as you can see, they're way down in the boot order. And so often, it's because so often they don't have a strong social game. And I don't think Elaine is going to have that problem. I am worried that she's going to be weak in the challenges.
Yeah.
Not the strength-based ones, but I can see her struggling in the water or maybe getting over a wall, which could potentially make her a target in early boot, which would be a real shame. The biggest issue for this character type is that they're too vocal. And I suspect this could get Elaine in trouble because she will not take any crap from the dudes on the beach. And that might do her in, because American Survivor in particular, that does not fly. But the one woman who doesn't stand for crap is Sandra. And having her there as a mentor or a coach could be exactly the shot in the arm that Elaine needs to get the better, get a better handle on the game. Mm-hmm. So I do think she will do better than 16th place. I can see her going pretty deep.
Yeah.
And she's awesome. Like, how easy was she to listen to? I think she's going to make friends so quickly.
She's great. And I don't even want to manifest what the list is kicking out about Elaine.
I know.
I don't like it.
I don't want to think that into existence either. But there's again, it's the history of players before you. And okay. Lauren Rimmer played it right in that she was like, she kept sucking it back in every time she wanted to tell someone where to go. And that's kind of what Elaine has to do, is just focus on the social side of things. And athletically, I think she's going to do relatively okay, because, you know, the stuff that she is good at is, you know, there does involve, you know, a lot of athleticism with basketball and the other stuff that she plays. So she might be fine.
Okay. Can you tell me who is the best I can see your Periscope in the history of the show? Is it Cass?
Well, they've never won.
Yes.
So yeah, I would have to say Cass. Often
third place.
The ones that don't go out early are often goats. They're like Angela Perkins was one. Mm-hmm. I think who else finished high up? There's not a lot. Like they're really pre-merge again and again and again. Cassandra in Fiji.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're going way back now, right?
Okay. All right. Well, let's hear about the sixth person out of the game, Angie.
All right. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right. This is our social butterfly, and that's Vince.
Vince.
So this is, our 27-year-old admissions counselor from California. And I'm calling the social butterfly the Todd Herzog. So this is the male player.
Well, he's won.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
it's a good character type to be. He's the male player who's extremely good at making social connections. He's the male equivalent to the siren. So people want to be his friend. They want to align with him and they want to protect him in the game. He is not a physical threat, which helps him post-merge, but it means he needs to rely on the strengths of others to make it that far, which he can often fail to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I first considered having Vince as the know-it-all. But then I moved him into the social butterfly spot because the rest of the players didn't fit where they were. Sometimes working out the character types is a bit of a slide puzzle. Like you think you're making progress because half the picture is formed. Then you realize the other half is a god-awful mess.
And for new listeners, you never have people that are the same thing in one cast.
I try not to because I don't believe that. I think if you're too similar to another player, they hold you off and put you in the next season. As we heard in Josh's interviews, so many of these players almost made it and then someone bumped their spot and it's someone who is in the same character type as them. So I usually think that if it doesn't fit, then I need to go back and look at it again because there's something that they said that I'm not giving enough weight to. That's usually it. You know, some guy will seem really nice, but they also say I can be a bit bossy. And I was focusing on the nice part, not on the bossy part. And I'm like, well, wait, if that's more of a dominant character type, character trait for him, and then I make him this, then how does everything else reshuffle? And then when it fits, it fits. And then I say, Jeff, I'm done.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So, I think he's funny and charming enough to be the social butterfly. I do. And there's often a bit of a crossover between these two character types. So this is not the first time that I've gone back and forth between know-it-alls and social butterflies. So Zeke, David Wright, and Rafe were the three that come to mind that I was like, are they, aren't they? And going to Stanford is a super big deal. And I do not doubt for one second his Survivor super fan knowledge. I just think this was the role that casting kind of was thinking for him, is that kind of like, you know, fun, charming, bubbly, easy to get along with character.
My biggest worry with Vince is that he won't be social enough.
He seemed so serious at the beginning of the interview, but at the end he was like, I'm going to cut a bitch. And I just thought,
cut a bitch is not social, Angie.
Making a joke about it is.
I guess so, but ideally.
He's not actually cutting a bitch when he's saying I'm going
to
cut a bitch.
But he talked in his bio about it. He wants to flip tables over and he's not going to take any crap from anybody. So, I mean, sometimes on Survivor, but you have to take some crap.
And sometimes people in their bios are talking like how they want to assert themselves, but in real life, they're not actually like mm-hmm. that. I mean, I think he can make some tough decisions. I think he's got a very good strategic handle on the game. And I think he'll be able to do what needs to be done, but I think he's going to be like soft and funny and easygoing and no one's really going to see it coming.
That would be good.
That works to his advantage. I do think he's going to go further than this. I think Vince will make merge, but that's assuming that he does not get targeted as a weak player in these challenges, which I think are going to be pretty physical and, what worries me, and this comes up in one of the other write-ups that I've done for one of the other players. What worries me is these people that are like, I'm not going to be a leader. I'm not going to volunteer for anything. I'm not going to be the guy that's the hero that ends up letting everybody down and then becomes a target. What I'm scared about is if no one volunteers to do the puzzle, and they're not the most athletic on the team, there's no reason to keep you. So you will be a target because you seem like dead weight. So friggin' do the puzzles, smart guys and girls, because I'm scared for you otherwise. And hopefully they'll be able to adapt when they're there and realize that, holy crap, everyone has a six pack but me.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to make myself valuable somehow.
Yeah. Look, if you can't do the six pack, you might as well be able to do the six piece puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
At least.
Yeah. No, I mean, really, like what other choices do you have? Like,
I feel like we could do something catchy again, with that. Yeah.
These are ridiculously athletic people too. So yeah, do the one piece.
If you don't want to do the crunches, you better be there when it's crunch time.
Do you have like a little Rolodex of?
I'm working on it. I mean, we're workshopping stuff. We've had nothing is good yet. Yeah.
I like the way your voice changes when you pull out the platitudes.
Yeah. Well, I try to throw it out like Jeff.
Risk it to get the biscuit.
That's right. That's right.
Is that your Probst voice?
A little bit. Probst-esque. Yeah. Sort of like a game show hosty, but not necessarily like an impression.
Does anyone else get super creeped out when he's like, time for some love?
Oh, yeah. I know, like, everybody does.
Skin crawling.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. I mean, Steven talks about that a lot, of that Jeff's description of what happens when the loved ones visit. It is almost like if an alien was trying to describe. All right. Who wants to see members of their family and get some love? All right, let's bring out your brother. All right, here he comes. What's it like to have a brother?
Do you like your brother?
Yeah. All right. Angie, let's not get distracted. We have character types to talk about. All right. Who's the seventh person out of this season?
Number 14 is our Pony Boy, who this year is Jamal Shipman.
Okay. Tell us about Pony Boy, because I feel like that some of our millennial listeners might not know about the Pony Boy.
Okay, so you want to know the origin of the word is from a book called The Outsiders, which I don't know if they're making you learn in school anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Young man.
And there was a movie. There was a movie also.
With Timothy Hutton, who's like my age. How come they haven't
remade
that?
They've remade everything, Angie.
Because it doesn't reflect anything that's real anymore. I suppose if they could really super update it, but I don't know. I think the idea of like rough kids nowadays is kind of a joke, so...
Mm-hmm.
So yes, the Pony Boy in the book was the super sensitive kid who was running around in a rough crowd, but he was super empathetic and compassionate, and he needed to stay gold, basically.
Okay.
So the Pony Boy in the case of Survivor is he's an athletic, non-strategic, nice guy with a non-threatening job and a really big heart. So this has morphed over the years quite significantly to being, it's the same kind-hearted guy, but with a far more strategic and capable game style. So they want someone who's kind of quirky, that someone who's like, you know, works for a nonprofit or like, you know, has an ice cream parlor or something like that, but is, you know, they can still be a super fan. They can still be highly intelligent. They're not really like Brandon Hance was a Pony Boy. They don't, you know, Zane was a Pony Boy. They don't make them like that anymore. So this is one of those things like, Jamal, please don't be offended by being a Pony Boy, because, you know, Adam Klein was also a Pony Boy. It's a good thing to be these days.
Jamal, I was a Pony Boy. It's okay. You could be one too.
It's the tears.
I won. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sensitive.
So... yeah, the same way the secretly smart Bikini Babe is the younger version of Meredith Grey, the Pony Boy is the younger version of Mr. Miyagi. So I look for players who like to help people, who have chosen professions that elevate others. And Jamal helps young women get opportunities to succeed, and it's something he's clearly passionate about. Highly intelligent and insightful. He's kind, athletic, funny, seems to know the game really well. I really like him. I think he's a real threat in this game. I like that... you know, the players that talk about flexibility and adaptability always stand out to me, because I think that's a really smart way to approach the game these days. And I like that he articulated that every season is a new hybrid of the game, because it depends on who else is playing. And I think that's a really great read. So I think Jamal will do better than this spot for sure. I think he has real potential to go pretty far.
Okay, yeah. I think he makes the merge. So yeah, I'll take the over here on Pony Boy Jamal. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, sure. Angie, who do you have as the eighth person out? We're starting to get into, what if we have a 10-person jury, final three? This is the first person out at the merge.
All right, our merge boot then is our secretly smart Bikini Babe, who is Molly Byman.
Okay, all right.
So this is our 28-year-old law student.
I could see this. I feel like that. Yeah. This is sort of where the merge boot is going, of everybody just like, all right, this person... is probably just, we can all agree on this. She probably doesn't have an idol, might not play it. Let's just agree on a consensus person.
That's right. So this is the Amanda Kimmel. This type is usually, young pre-med or pre-law student. Sometimes it's just an attractive girl that is sharper than the rest of the other young attractive girls. But as a law student at Duke, Molly is like a perfect example of this character type. It is a very small jump from secretly smart bikini babe to Meredith Grey, and they often suffer from the same personality flaws, which is they tend to be too intense and hyper, like Candace and Eliza, or too passive, like Alexis Maxwell or Lauren O'Connell from more recent years. Mm-hmm. They are often at the bottom of their alliance or not leading it if they are in an alliance. So Molly has a real shot here to make a run for the end game. Mm-hmm. But I worry that she won't have her hands on the reins of that end game, and it will just be like a casualty of her alliance. I think she has the athleticism to get through the early game, and I really like her wisdom and compassion. She does seem to be highly intelligent without having that frenetic energy or any sort of arrogance, which is often typical of this character type. But it's hard to hide that level of intelligence. And she seems very cautious, which I fear from the outside will look like her gears are turning no matter what's happening in the tribe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you say something to someone and they have that kind of silent intensity and they're thinking, you don't even realize that you're doing it when you're one of these people. But people pick up on that vibe and it scares them. So I hope she can be fun enough to kind of counterbalance this kind of serious analytical side. Because she does, honestly, she comes across like an amazing human. So I'm really hoping that she comes through and finds a good alliance. These are always the players that I love pregame. And I always think this time for sure it will be different. And it rarely is. So I don't know how well overall Molly's going to do, honestly.
I don't have a real good sense of her going into the game. She's one of the people that I feel like I really have not been able to put together a three-dimensional picture of her yet from the preseason stuff.
It's funny because she was the one person out of all the pre-game interviews that I thought, I think I would like to go and sit and have a coffee with her more than any of the others. And it's simply because she seems, you know, really sensible, mm-hmm. and down to earth with a really, really good sense of, like, you know, the world and what the world needs more of and what the world needs less of. And I think I just really respected her. But I mean, how that's going to play out in Survivor, who the hell knows?
I'd have coffee with just about anybody, but I love coffee. I'm a big, big, big coffee fan. I mean, there's only like a handful of Survivors I wouldn't want to have coffee with.
Well, I mean, obviously, I would want to sit down with all these people because I love this game and everything about it. But, there were a few people whose personalities, there were a couple of people that were just in my list. Like, man, that would be a really cool person to know on a personal level.
Okay. So. All right. After Molly gets voted out at the merge.
Let's get through this. I'm getting so nervous about all these cast members that are still left to go through.
Okay. Still a lot of people left to go. Angie, mm-hmm. who's finishing in 12th place this season?
That would be our seduce and destroy, who is Dean Kalowski.
Okay. This one makes sense to me. The I could see that. Seduce and destroy. What is that? Tell our millennial listeners what the seduce and destroy reference is from.
It's from a movie called Magnolia, and it's a really obscene motivational speaker played by the amazing Tom Cruise, who goes on stage and tells you to tame women and essentially says that your mission in life, men, to go and claim your inner identities is to seduce and to destroy. So this is about like how to treat members of the opposite sex. And it's tongue in cheek in the movie. It's supposed to be really, kind of ironic, according to the character. So I thought it was funny because oftentimes this character type comes across like that kind of schmarmy, full of himself. I am a ladies' man. They cannot resist me. But all the ladies are secretly going, ew. So this is called the Drew Christie.
Yes.
Is
what okay. That's what I always remember about the seduce and destroy.
Yes. But it's also Chris Underwood and Earl Cole. Like there's... Sometimes we get, just like we sometimes get a highly strategic pony boy and sometimes we get Zane, this character type is typically a good looking sales guy. And sometimes he's a little slimy, and a little bit off-putting and arrogant. And other times they're just really intelligent, crafty guys that are able to do really well in the game. So Dean is right down the middle of these two types, I think. He's charming. He's easy to talk to, which works in his favor. But also, I don't know if you felt this way. A good part of his interview with Josh sounded super rehearsed. Like he was planning his pitch because he remembered his whole it's like a platform. I'm well-rounded. So I'm the guy who could do this, but also this and all while doing that. And he had like about three of these little anecdotes of all these different things that prove that he's well-rounded. And I just thought, that's your sales pitch because you're a sales guy. Who you really are is something different. So I think always be closing isn't the best survivor approach because players are looking for real connections, not the best sales pitch. So hopefully he will realize that when, you know, boots on the ground. But the fact that he's only seen a handful of the most recent seasons, I don't think bodes well for him. Like, will he even know who the F Sandra and Rob are? I'm so excited.
That's funny. Yeah, that'll be fun.
You know, when you see the big reveal and then it shows the cast, I'm going to be like scanning it madly to see the people that are like faking that. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cause that's going to be hilarious. So
Dean, for me, that I listened to the interview that Josh did first, and then I saw some of his other videos, and he was a lot different in like the video footage that I saw from what I ended up hearing with Josh. I thought he was like sort of one way with Josh, but then he did seem pretty different in the videos.
Well, what was your impression from the videos?
He seemed really wacky in the video. He seemed like pretty like normal, and I thought he sounded kind of grounded with Josh.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think he's gonna.
Making faces really, and like flexing and like being like a real wacko,
a real bro, right?
Yeah.
I think he's likely to like this type is most likely to form the Three Amigos alliance. So, you know, let's give the. I can see that happening for sure. So, I just, you know what, the strategy, I'm going to keep harping on this. I think the survivor strategy is so advanced now. I simply don't see how a casual fan can navigate it. So I do think
but here he is, and then he made the merge.
Yeah, I think he's going to be able to be under the radar guy a little bit.
Okay, so maybe what you're saying is that the system has not yet account for that the game has evolved, but we're going off of all of the past results going back to the beginning of the show, and maybe in the future, then he's just out in front of the curve right now.
Usually, I mean, they don't go out super duper early, but they this is where the game catches up to them. They usually do this well. Because they're athletic guys and they have friends that are also athletic guys and girls, and they manage to keep them safe. But then they hit merge, and then suddenly, you know, they've got all these big ideas that don't make any sense, or, you know, they realize that, you know, people start to think they're schemey and they're not being, level-headed with them anymore. Suddenly the future winner is like, bro, I know. And it feels like condescended to. And it's just like, wow, this guy's a real douchebag. Can we just get rid of him next tribal? That tends to be what happens.
Mm-hmm. What is Nick Majorano seduce and destroy?
Oh, you bet he is.
Oh, come on. Hasn't the mayo jar been through enough?
It's a hard life.
Okay. All right. So after Dean goes out, we'll have our 11th place finisher. Who will that be, Angie?
That is our Little Red Riding Hood, who is Kelly Kim.
Okay. Remind me what the Little Red Riding Hood is.
That's the Nat 10.
Okay.
So these are the players that are cast in the show, simply to be used as pawns to help other players get to the end.
Hey, I'm telling you, keep the Nat 10 rally around. It would be a big
Amber
mistake to get rid of her.
Yeah, Amber was too.
Yeah, keep her around too.
The only way this type wins is if they get to the end with a strategic player who has brought them there and they're facing a bitter jury, or, this is going to cut a little close, they get to the end with a strategic player who gets cut at three by the other moron the strategic player brought to the end.
So, what, you're saying Jenna Maraska is a Little Red Riding Hood?
Yeah.
I don't think she's a Red Riding Hood.
Was she any good at the game?
I mean that she like Little Red Riding Hood, I think, is just like an innocent sort of like going to grandmother's house.
Yeah, they're often just kind of the dippy bra. This is old school. It's kind of the dippy bra who gets put on the cast so that she can just be pretty, and then she latches onto some guy and then just kind of fumbles her way to the end. She's not a threat to anybody. That's how she gets to the end.
Ah.
And then if you've like really pissed everybody off, then they say, well, I'm giving it to her then. Because Rob, I thought we were best friends. Mm-hmm. So that could kind of happen. So on, but with Kelly Kim is not an idiot. She's an MBA student, in fact. So this is a good example of how production is not casting any duds anymore. So the reason why Kelly is this character type is simply because she was very bubbly and she doesn't know anything about Survivor. So she said the social experiment aspect of the game is intriguing to her, and the challenge component is the second thing that interests her, which makes me want to barf in my mouth. So I can always tell who the Little Red Riding Hood is because I start drifting off during her Wiggler interview.
Oh.
No, it's true. There's nothing offensive or annoying in the interview, but I'm listening for like relevant game content and it's just not there. You know, and she's like, she states she's not really a reality TV person. And I can't see her making any real strategic moves. It's a complex strategic game, and there are a lot of people out there who really know what they're doing. And I think for people who haven't studied the game, it takes every ounce of their energy just to figure out how to stay in the majority, and they have no capacity to plan out like 2, 3, or 4 moves ahead. Like, it's just moving too fast for them. So, I mean, she is no threat to anyone. So if she makes it to merge, she has huge potential. So she could be taken right to the end by a stronger player. Mm-hmm.
Did you originate the word potential? Is that on your resume, Angie? Did you invent that?
A friend of mine used it in passing, and I stole it from him. That was Brandon Spears.
Okay. All right. Well, kudos to Brandon Spears. You were the first one to use it on a podcast.
That's correct. But it is an incredible word, which is why I have to give credit when I use it. But yes, I was the first one to voice it into existence.
Okay. All right. Angie, 10 down, 10 to go, including who the system predicts will win Survivor Island of the Idols. But before we go any further, let me take a moment and thank one of our sponsors. And I think this is a good one. I think it's appropriate for what we are talking about. I want to tell you about the people at Embark, embarkvet.com with promo code RHAP. They are the leaders in dog DNA testing. Angie, finally, with the Embark Dog DNA Test Kit, you can tell exactly what character type your dog is with an exact DNA readout of all the different breeds that make up your dog.
That is amazing. That's actually really a responsible dog ownership too, because the different breeds have different tendencies. Like, they may be like a scent hound and you don't even know it, and they could like take off in a fenceless park. So that's a very smart thing to do for your dog.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Not only that, but you can also screen for 170 plus genetic health conditions, and that'll help your vet provide the best medical care for your dog. Angie, if only the survivors would submit to a DNA test, like an easy to do kit like the Embark Vet, you would be able to tell so much more about them and you wouldn't have to do this guesswork for the character types.
That would be so much easier. I spend hours listening to them. If I could just like swab their cheek. Ugh.
That would be so much easier, because all you have to do, is you just perform that swab for your dog, and then you are going to send it in, and then you get tons of results about your dog. Nicole had her friend Alyssa submit the test, and she got a readout that she has a 33.6% Chihuahua mixed breed with 27.3 poodle thrown in there and 19.7 Shih Tzu as well. You get an exact readout plus plenty of more data about your dog. Discover your dog more than fur deep with the most accurate dog DNA test kit on the market. Embark Dog DNA Test Kit is going to tell you up to 250 different breeds and those 170 different genetic health conditions to help you best care for your pup. Over 50% of dogs are either at risk or a carrier of a genetic disease, and the panel test screens for those diseases, which can be present in many breeds, whether mixed breed or pure breed. So get the best in class dog DNA test kit. So right now for our listeners, Embark has an exclusive summer offer you can't get anywhere else. Go to embarkvet.com. Use promo code RHAP to save 15% off your dog DNA test kit. Discover your dog more than fur deep. Visit embarkvet.com and use promo code RHAP to save. That's at EmbarkVet, EmbarkVet.com. Use promo code RHAP to save. Okay. All right. And so Nora's character type need not apply. Okay. All right. Angie, let's go with our top 10 for the Island of the Idols. Who
getting closer
is at number 10?
Number 10 is our alpha male control freak, who is Aaron Meredith. So this is our 36-year-old gym owner from Rhode Island.
Okay.
So this character type is the Andrew Savage. So he's often a successful business owner or a doctor or a lawyer. They get in trouble because they are hard-headed and bossy. So they can't stop trying to lead, even after proclaiming that they will not put themselves in the leader position. They just can't help themselves because they can't help but think of everyone else as helpless without them. So it's when this type can rein in their A-type tendencies and focus on being a positive team player that they do well. And Wendell is the only player of this type to win, and it's because he was able to do that with his, his boss characteristics. So Aaron seems like a super duper nice guy, and as long as he keeps his personal trainer on the inside and on the DL and leans more into his party boat captain persona, I think he could have an excellent game.
Wendell was alpha male control freak?
He was. It was another one of those ones where I really had to relook at the cast again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it was because he's his own boss. And he said, I can be a little bit of a control freak and I can be a little bit domineering. And he said, I'm going to really steer away from that. And I'm going to be the laid back guy and really focus on relationships. And ultimately, that's why he beat Dominic. So it was a really good strategy for him.
Bryce did say that Wendell demanded to be in the Zaddy calendar for both 2019 and 2020.
Well, that would be a mistake not to include him, but yes, I can see that kind of assertiveness is what we're talking about. Like, he has no problem. He's very make it happen kind of guy, right? Mm-hmm. And I think he was really purposely trying to tone that down a little bit during the game. So very, very good job. But again, this is one of those things that was not a huge predominant personality trait for him, because I do think you can't completely change who you are. I think it was just a segment that he had to be like, just breathe through it, let it go. So Aaron was, I think he's more of a physical threat than this character type normally is. And I'm super duper scared that he'll draw too much attention to himself. Like, for anyone who watches International Survivor, he reminds me a bit of Rocco from South African Survivor. Mm-hmm. I think his likability on top of his physical strength will actually work against him and put a huge target on him. And I do think he's going to be a merge boot right around this time.
I mean, I am no authority on South African Survivor, but I feel like that Aaron knows the game a lot better than Rocco, who seemed like he was kind of Rocco was like a professional athlete, right? He was like a rugby mm-hmm. player.
Yes, but I think of Rocco because he was extremely athletic, but he had a remarkable personality. He was such a sweet guy and so likable. But he just couldn't rely on his social game because he was physically just so threatening and people couldn't get past it. And it wasn't even like he was, super duper, some of these athletic types are like, I need to win every challenge because I'm no quitter. I just can't say no. It's just like, well, then you're doing it to yourself. Mm-hmm. Even if you lean back, take a backseat to that, you can't hide. Like, this guy is completely jacked. Like, you can't hide that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we'll see how he does.
All right. That seems about right here for Aaron. Let's go with our ninth place finisher.
Our ninth place is our G.I. Jane.
G.I. Jane.
Missy Bird.
Okay. All right. I mean, she is literally in the armed forces. So mm-hmm. I think I could see this one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this was, I'm going to explain a little later. I had two women that were like at a dead heat for this. And I'll tell you my reasoning for giving it to Missy. So this is the Stephanie LaGrossa. So the G.I. Jane is tough as nails. She's a challenge beast. She has the mental strength to push through almost anything. She can also be very hard-headed and short-tempered. She's inclined to temper tantrums and sometimes proves not to be a team player. Her social game tends to suck for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And, the G.I. Jane has never won the game.
Okay.
Missy is a once-in-a-lifetime diamond of a G.I. Jane.
Oh!
Yeah. I actually had another player as my G.I. Jane, and I finished casting everyone. And at the end, I had one male and one female left over, and Missy was my female. And I had to put her as the G.I. Jane because I believe it's what she is. But I wanted to call her the secretly smart G.I. Jane.
Secretly smart G.I. Jane.
I honestly think Missy is the full package, and I am so blown away by her. She's
so you feel like the system's too low on her?
Yeah, I think she could go a lot further than ninth, for sure.
I mean, ninth place is not, you know, lighting the world on fire.
Yeah, no, it's not nothing either. But no, I think she could go top five for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, she's a super fan who's highly intelligent, extremely athletic, with the mental strength to push herself through this game. And if she's able to make real social connections, there really will be no stopping her. Like, Missy knowing French really blew me away. Like, speaking, like, I'm a Canadian, so speaking as someone who took 8 years of French, and I still can't speak it to save my life. The fact that she was ready to go into a French immersion environment after studying it a couple years at college is crazy talk. It is not an easy language to learn at all. So going through this cast too, I was really struck by the number of players who faced real challenges in their lives and the players who, let's say didn't. I think a lot of the players out there honestly wouldn't last 5 minutes in Missy's life. And I cannot wait to see what she brings to this game. There are, you know, there's always three or four players I put a little star beside pregame because I think they could be really remarkable. And Missy is the first one of these for me. And Missy's also one that I think is going to really benefit from Sandra being available to her. I think they're going to get along great. I think they have a lot in common and have a lot of shared lived experience potentially. And
I mean, they were at the same Air Force base.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think Sandra is going to be like really putting her under her wing and saying, this is what you got to do. And I think Missy's smart enough to, like, she's very teachable. She's also the youngest on the cast, but I really don't think she's going to behave the youngest. Mm-hmm. I think Dean's going to behave the youngest, honestly.
I can see it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Missy, ninth place. Who is now top eight?
Top eight. So at eighth place, we have our Chelsea Handler, which is easy because it's Chelsea Walker.
Okay. All right. First time out for Chelsea Handler. So this is it. But if she comes back, that's it. Chelsea Walker. No good.
You got one shot at this, Chelsea. Don't F it up.
Okay.
So I'm calling this the Hannah Shapiro. So I'm making Hannah the poster child for this character type because I think she accurately bridges the gap between all the Chelsea Handlers. So the modern Chelsea Handler usually works in communications like social media or technical writing or something like that. This type is one of the key narrators of the game. They're funny. They're charming. They're often cutting, a little sarcastic. They know the game well, but they rarely drive the strategy of the game. So they make good alliance mates and usually finish top 10, but they're usually not running things. And so often they end up kind of getting pushed out of their own alliances or kind of left behind a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Chelsea fits the bill, I think, quite perfectly. She's more athletic than most Chelsea Handlers, but her charm and her wit is right on point. She knows Rap and Survivor extremely well, which is also very characteristic of this type. I love her confidence. Telling Steven, "You're wrong, sir," about revealing idols, I thought was like the high point of her interview.
I mean, anytime somebody tells Steven they're wrong.
It's pretty awesome, right?
Yeah.
I liked it, not necessarily because it's the best move that she's talking about revealing or not revealing idols, but simply because she believes it the best move. Like, second guessing has killed so many people's games. And in particular, I think second guessing hurts the Chelsea Handler in particular, you know, because they're questioning everything. They're flip-flopping. You have to make a decision and stick to them. And I think she will not be a fancy fencerton. So that's good to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do believe she'll be able to cool her super fan jets and navigate her way through this game using her Rap knowledge to guide her. I think Rap fans definitely have an advantage simply because we've talked every scenario to death. Like, when you have, like, a quick decision that you have to make, like, yeah. Do you take the advantage or do you take the rice? Rap fans know to take the rice because you guys have talked through it again and again and again, whereas other players don't understand the outcomes and well, they'll fumble around say, and F it up.
You know, I don't want to be, like, on a high horse about, you know, people that listen to the podcast versus, of course, I much prefer people that listen to the podcast than people who don't listen to the podcast. I mean, that goes without saying. But I will say that a podcast listener who goes on to play, a super fan can overthink situations also. Like, it can, you can know so much that is a detriment.
Absolutely. And you do have to keep that stuff to yourself too. Like, you can't be constantly just gaming, because it becomes nauseating to people. And I think Chelsea's very aware of that. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not gonna pull a Jacob and go out there and overplay. It's just useful, especially when you're tired, when you're hungry, and you have to make a snap decision.
Right.
Like, I'm at the Survivor auction. I need to save my money. I have to get that advantage. Yeah. You just know the game well enough to know what's going to happen next. And you can hear the voices of Rob and Steven in your head telling you,
yeah,
like, don't do this, do that. Because, like, sometimes you just need a little bit of validation. And it's not that you always know the right answer. But imagine, like, Kelly going into that, not knowing the game, and like, oh, I'm going to take the advantage and I'm going to do a really bad lie about it. And then I'm going to be the first.
Do we know that
off,
Kelly doesn't know the game, that maybe she's not a super fan. She doesn't know it at all.
She's watched like 3 seasons or something. Like, she's barely seen it.
I mean, 3 seasons is enough to get the ball rolling. Yeah.
I guess.
If she's playing Settlers of Catan, I think that she can handle Survivor.
We'll see. Like I said, she's a really smart lady, so we'll see how she does. But I don't know. I just.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we've spent years analyzing this game, and for someone to come in with just like, "Nah, I spent a summer watching a few seasons. Well, I'll be fine."
I think there's a couple. There's varying degrees. Like, I definitely hear what you're saying in terms of, like, you know, the Malcolm Gladwell books between Blink and Outliers, between, you know, 10,000 hours, and sort of just like having, like, knowing every situation so well that it's almost like instinctual that you're able to make those snap decisions like you're talking about. I totally hear that, but I think there's a difference between, you know, I think if you come in and you've seen 3 seasons or so, like, I think you have a certain baseline level of understanding, and then you're out there and you're thinking about it, you know, almost all day long. And so I think that's still different from somebody who's coming in, who's never seen it or seen like a couple of episodes, who's just like a total recruit.
Okay, people who've only seen a couple of episodes, yes, but is
and they end up on the show,
Survivor?
You know, yeah, like your JP Hilsebecks or people that were just at a bar and like, hey, you want to be on Survivor?
Yeah, but they force feed you like 3 seasons at least. So they start like saying, oh, I want to play, like.
Well, they don't, you know, all watch them.
Yeah, no, I guess. I think we have a little bit of a disagreement here, because I do think that the superfan does much better. And, you know, this is going to come up again in a player that we haven't talked about yet. And I will go on my rant then. But for now, let's talk about 7th place.
Okay.
Did I finish talking about Chelsea? Yeah, she's good. Else? She's one to watch. I think she'll do really well. I liked her a lot.
Okay.
7th place is our John McClane.
All right.
This is Tommy Sheehan. So John McClane is the Boston Rob.
Hey.
Nope. No pressure now.
Okay.
So this character type is your average, often blue collar guy that you never see coming. He's athletic, he's social, and he is cutthroat. Okay.
Just to explain for our younger millennial listeners, that John McClane is not the former senator from the state of Arizona. We're not talking. That's John McCain. John McClane was a character from the Die Hard series of films. He's an action adventure hero.
Mm-hmm. And a Survivor winner himself.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Who, John McClane? McClane is one in Boston Rob.
Yes, that. But didn't you do a Brent Steele with John McClane in it?
Oh, Angie, if you're testing me on who's won Survivor Brent Steele's, then it's not the right day for that.
What do I know? I called it Brent Steele, so there you go.
Yeah. Yes. Sorry, some of the Brent Steele stuff is sort of in and out. It does not get committed to the long term hard drive.
Honestly, at this point in my life, I think I've forgotten more Survivor than I can remember. So I'm just like, I'm basically these players that I'm complaining about at this point. So.
Mm-hmm.
So Tommy was the male player I had left over after finishing putting together all the character types. So it's like, for me, it's like when you finish putting together your IKEA furniture and then you discover you have one piece left over that you didn't use and the dresser looks perfect and you don't want to undo it. Yeah. But you're like, it looks really important. I can't just pretend it doesn't exist.
You should have had me build your furniture. Don't go to IKEA.
Or Wendell.
Yeah. And what a piece to forget too is the Boston Rob. So that was Tommy, and I had to do a massive reshuffle. Like, four of my male players moved character types in order to put Tommy where he belongs, which is here. So I'm obsessed with Tommy.
I'm obsessed with him.
Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with his personality, with his approach to the game. He is a well-rounded super fan. I simply cannot imagine him not doing well.
Okay, but why only seven here? I feel like that seven is low on Tommy. I feel like he's a lot of people's winner picks. It was the First Lady of Podcasting's winner pick.
There is something to be said for the win rank as well as the final. Let me just find it on the specific thing. Yeah, you get a win placement and you get a rank placement. And the John McClane is actually got a slightly better percentage of winning than he does in placing. So he's mostly, you know, he's sixth in line to actually win versus ninth in place to in all of the character types put together.
Okay, that's Tommy.
Yeah, at 6'4", I think he's going to have a hard time finding someone else to be a meat shield for himself, because that's kind of his plan. I think he's going to be easy to be around. I think he's going to make a great social game. But again, he's one of these hugely physical players that isn't going to be able to hide being physically,
You know what? You bring up height, Angie. I think it'd be interesting. I don't know if anybody has ever done this research. Maybe you have. I would love to know, what is the ideal height for a survivor, a male player and a female survivor player?
I feel like they're relatively short, the ones that do well in the end, because I think that, you know, Missy was even saying, like, I'm going to be towering over people. It's going to be really hard not to notice me, to target me as a physical threat. So I think that's a real thing.
Trying to think of who the tallest winner might be. I think is it Tyson?
It probably is.
Yeah. I don't know if we have that information online anywhere. I feel like we don't get sort of like, it's not a boxing match. We don't get like sort of height and weight on the survivors. But I think that would be interesting to know.
True North Times probably has it. I think that out there, it exists everywhere.
If you're listening, let us know. What is the ideal height to be if you're a survivor? And we could factor that in.
Okay. But I can see why he's a lot of people's winner picks. I think he has a very good chance.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's getting much very deep through merge with that physique, especially if he's a good social player. Because, again, he's going to scare the crap out of everybody. So,
okay. But he's a fourth grade teacher. He's not like imposing.
He's a big, strapping, very handsome, well-built young lad. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be hard to hide that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Number six.
We're at the finale. Who's in the finale?
Yep. We're Mr. Miyagi, which is Dan Spilo.
Okay, Mr. Miyagi. Okay.
Hope I pronounced his last name right.
For our millennial listeners, Mr. Miyagi.
Oh my God, these millennials need to watch more movies.
They need to watch a lot more 80s movies. He was a karate sensei of a young man named Daniel-san. Daniel-san learned karate from Mr. Miyagi. And Mr. Miyagi, you feel like, is anybody who's going to be sort of a very zen, very calm teacher of the potential students.
Yes, he's the older male, often paternal, who is a great read on people and storytelling. So these guys tend to take players under their wing and try and build other players up. So they are not high energy or intense. They can be cutthroat, but they tend to fly under the radar most of the time. So this type has never won the game, but they've reached Final Tribal a whopping four times. So they're not good at winning.
Not only do we fly under the radar, but we can catch a fly with chopsticks. If you saw that movie.
There's too many converging references there. Yeah. So Dan was almost the alpha male control freak because he owns his own business. But his constant assertion that he wants to hold other people up and he wants those around him to be their best selves kind of... locked him in here.
There's a lot of people screenshotting Dan at the Emmys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense that he would be there. I didn't notice that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch the Emmys. I have kids. I have no life at all anymore. So
yeah.
So I like a strategy of staying where he is and being part of the group for the first three or four votes. But I'm also a little worried that this could look a little sketchy. Like, if he's refusing to go off and talk with people, like, won't that be like, oh, why is he refusing? He doesn't even want to talk. I mean, what the hell's up with that?
Is he going to refuse to go off and talk with people one-on-one, or is he going to not go off on his own?
I think because he said it's when the two or three people walk off that the rest of the group are like, yeah, why don't we target those guys? They're definitely working together or something. So yeah, people are going to want to kind of like, hey, let's go get some water.
Yeah.
He's going to be like, no, I'm good. I'm good here. I'm just going to stay with the group if that's okay.
Yeah.
And they're going to be like,
I think you're being a little too literal in terms of like,
that's what he said in the interview. He literally said a couple of people are going to walk off and I'm going to pull back and say, no.
Yeah,
I'm
but
good.
He didn't say that a couple of people are going to page me and I'm going to say, I have to always stay with the group. He's just going to naturally try to follow where the herd goes. I don't think that he's going to be that literal about it.
Well, we'll see. I hope it works out for him.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always show those kind of details in the edit, too. They just like, oh, that Dan guy, I don't know about him. And you don't see that. It's because he literally said, nah.
I mean, he's referring to last season where, you know, Reem and Big Wendy were like, hey, yeah. Keith, let's teach you how to swim. And you know, they were going off and hanging out, not with the big group. Yes. So.
And everyone's like, what are they up to?
Yeah, I think there's wisdom in what he's saying.
No, for sure. For sure. I'm just thinking, worried about it might backfire. That's all. Okay. And he's the one that I most particularly was thinking, like, he doesn't want to volunteer for anything. But when you're not a physical powerhouse, what reasons are you giving your tribe to keep you if you aren't the puzzle guy? I think that that's going to hurt him not volunteering for stuff because he's an older guy. I don't think he's in super amazing shape, you know, next to all these other like crazy athletic people. So I'm worried that he's just going to be he's going to seem like a bit of a dead weight to his tribe.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope he's not dead weight.
I hope so too. But no, I think if he makes the merge, then he's going far. But honestly, I think this is optimistic for Dan. I think he's going pre-merge.
Okay. All right. Top five, baby.
Top five. Number five is our Heisenberg.
Heisenberg.
It's Ronnie Barta.
All right. I could see this.
Mm-hmm. This is our 35-year-old professional poker player. The Heisenberg is the Tony Vlachos. So this character type is also the Russell Hantz, but I chose Tony to be the poster boy because I wanted to highlight the real danger of this type when they have social likability. Dominic is a really good example of this type as well. Mm-hmm. So he's a 30-something blue-collar male who is super high energy, super intense, never stops thinking, moving, or scheming. If there's an idol, he will find it. He will sleep when he's dead, Rob.
Yeah.
So Ronnie is my Heisenberg for all these reasons. And I love Ronnie. I have a soft spot for these rough around the edges Boston types, and I have no idea why. But Ronnie is funny and smart and accessible, and I can see him having an excellent social and strategic game. Also, he speaks my language, which is any movie made in the 90s. And Josh Wigler, I know the good son. We could have bonded over the cliff scene and our mutual respect to betray you, but whatever, man. That's fine. Do it with Ronnie.
Yeah. There's a cliff scene in that movie?
In the good son?
The guy talks about what things were like before the wife.
Yeah, and his hands are up in the air, even though he never talks with his hands at any other point in time, ever. And then he mimes the cigar, which looks a little phallic, Cliff.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to come right out and say it right now in case we don't come back to it. And I know you hate it when I do this, but Ronnie is my winner pick.
Okay. I mean, I don't. Well, why do I get mad at that?
Because he's not in the number one spot. And you're like, how can he be the winner pick
Angie,
if he's not in the number
one spot? I don't try to make sense of the system anymore. That I go with the flow. Okay.
Yeah. Well.
Go with it.
What the system does have at number one, I think, is an extremely strong player. The rest of the players.
Yes.
So the placement rate is like the system identifies final three goats just as accurately as it predicts winners. So keep that in mind when you hear the top five. It's not like the best top five players of all time. Yeah.
You tell me my system says this person is number seven, but I say that this person is number three. I don't question it. I don't question it. I just go with it. This is that if it's what you want, then I am on board.
Go with the flow, Rob. That's what I call you when you're not around.
Yes. Yes. That's what people say about me.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Ronnie is my winner pick. His overall attitude and strategic outlook helped for sure. But honestly, the Rounders reference is why. So I don't know if you're a huge like Rounders fan.
I know about KGB. I know, yeah, I know he just tells with an Oreo. Is that how Ronnie got good at poker?
Maybe. But Rounders is one of those 90s movies for whatever reason. I really loved it. I've seen it like 20 times. Ronnie says he's the Knish, grinding it out on his leather ass. And this tells me that he is measured, humble, analytical, and will not take stupid risks or make flashy moves just for the sake of it. So for a more modern comparison of the Knish character, for people who aren't as fluent in 90s movies as I am, think of Boardwalk Empire's Arnold Rothstein, who would never take a bet that wasn't a sure thing, because that's that character and it's that kind of personality trait. So I liked that, you know, him saying that I don't want us to underestimate the power of a solid five, like old school Dragon Slayer throwback strategy here, which I thought was really cool. And I think he in particular is also going to really benefit from having Boston Rob on the island with them. He's going to bring Rob, like he's going to break down real game scenarios and ask him to confirm the play. And I think he's enough of a Knish to listen, because the Knish in that movie, The Rounders, he was not the flashy guy. He was not the hero. In fact, the hero was the one who like insulted him saying, I don't want to be like you. I don't want to be just like doing this for a living, just exhausting myself, making, you know, safe moves all the time. I think it's the person that doesn't make the big flashy game moves just for the sake of them that ends up winning. So,
okay. I like Ronnie. I think that this is always a fun character type to watch.
Okay. For sure. Number four.
What do you got?
Bit of an upset here. It's our Erin Brockovich, who is Elizabeth Beisel, the Olympic medalist.
Okay. All right. This one I think is a little out there.
It is out there. So, this one I'm
going to. Because if you don't like people that don't know the show.
I know. I know. And often the Erin Brockovich is a recruit. So sometimes she does really well. Like this character type, I'm calling it the Kim Spradlin. So this type is like a seemingly ordinary young woman who is surprisingly athletic and social. She is the John McClane equivalent of the females, in fact. But often either they get cast as someone like Kim, who's amazing and like God's gift to the game, or as someone who is like so Kim and doesn't know what they're doing and is like early boot. So
wait, now when you say this is confusing, because you're saying the Kim Spradlin and then she's also like so Kim, but you're not saying she's like so Kim Spradlin that you wouldn't believe it. You're saying that she is literally like the survivor named so Kim.
That is correct.
Okay.
When you bell yourself.
It's just for emphasis.
I had a really hard time with Elizabeth because I really felt that Missy was my G.I. Jane. And I did a bit of a mental experiment where I asked myself to forget about the fact that Elizabeth was a 3-time Olympian. Just look at her personality and her age. Really, at this point, she's just a woman with relatively few marketable skills in her career transition. And when I did that, her personality that emerged seemed very much more like my Erin Brockovich. She's very like she's very friendly and just she's not as hard edged as a G.I. Jane as well. Like she doesn't seem like she's going to be like really aggro and intense in that way. And the Erin Brockovich type is often a challenge beast. So I did feel like it wasn't that big of a stretch putting her here. And she seemed like a very likable social person. So I think she'll have a good social game. But there's no way in hell she gets this far in the game.
So. Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
As it turns out,
top four. She's losing in the final four fire making here.
Oh, she's losing in everything. So it's like,
Swimming.
No, that's true. She's one of these people that says she's doing Survivor because it's a challenge and she's always up for a challenge. This is my most hated answer. Like for those people, it's all about the comps. And honestly, she's that girl that's going to win the first immunity, individual immunity post-merge and become a target. And then in her final confessional say, well, I guess they saw me as a threat, which I am, which is such a waste of time, you know, like. Yeah, so she's a recruit. She won't understand the strategic nuances, and she's going to screw it up. So this is the one where I want to go on a tiny rant about my superfan bias, because I know it's not an asset in the game when you bring your super fandom to the point of like Jacob Derwin and Max Dawson. However, when you look at the winners of the past 10 seasons, at least 6 of them have been super fans. and even super duper fans of the game. And the winners that didn't have a ton of Survivor knowledge still knew the game really well. Like the ones that would not call themselves super fans are Ben, Michelle, Natalie Anderson, and Tony, for God's sakes. Like, these are people that all really had a handle on what the hell was going on. So, like, you need to be able to navigate the other elements of this game other than just the physical components. And, you know, she might be likable enough to be a solid cog in an alliance, but she will not get any votes at the end, because even if she gets there, she won't have made any moves. She won't know what to say to compel the jury.
Yeah. Well, I think that there is a baseline. I mean, if you're saying that, you know, there's four out of the last 10 winners were able to win the game with just like a baseline knowledge of the game of a couple of seasons, then
it was more than a couple. Maybe Natalie was a couple. Everyone else, like Ben had said it, he'd seen every episode. He just was not a super fan. He couldn't recite, you know, the boot order in reverse alphabetical order or whatever, but he knew the game. Mm-hmm. And Michelle Fitzgerald, too, like, she's, again, not a super fan, but she had a solid knowledge of the game. Like, she knew her seasons.
Yeah. I mean, no, enough, but I don't think you have to be like a super duper fan. But you have to have seen the show. That's what I say. You know, you can't come in off the street and then expect to win not knowing anything.
No, exactly. And she's like, she's saying that, you know, keep me out of all the schemey stuff, because I don't want to be that person that's scheming around. I want to stay as far away from it as possible, which means she's not going to have any real agency in the game, because she's going to have her fingers in her ears when the hard stuff is happening. And it's going to make her look flaky, and that you want everyone else to do all the hard stuff. And, you know, like, it'll appear to the real players like, oh, great. So you want the jury to like you and hate me. And that's why you want me to make this move and say why. And it's just, I don't know. It bothers me a little bit because she is such an elite athlete. It's almost like, you know, we were to say like, you know, I'm just going to swim. I'm just going to do a competitive swimming race because I'm a pretty solid swimmer. I think I could do it. And she's like, you have no technique whatsoever. And you're like, I'll figure it out. That's what it feels like to me. So, I mean.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, if you're listening, I mean, she's not, but you seem very lovely, but this is harder than you think it is. And no, I think she's going up pre-merge.
Okay. All right. Not going to push back on that. I think you're onto something there. Okay. Top three, baby. Who's going to be in the final three?
Number three is our tough old broad, who is Janet, the chief lifeguard from Florida or Jersey, depending on which bio you're reading. This I'm calling the Trish Haggerty. Haggerty.
Yeah.
So this type is older, strong, loyal, and compassionate. She bonds deeply with people and holds her own in challenges. So this is the one that, you know, you really want the tough old broad in your alliance for sure. So Janet is older, more heavy set than this type usually is. like, think of Challenge Beast Denise Stapley. That is typically what the tough old broad kind of looks like. And I don't think Janet is strong enough really to keep up. I didn't really get much of a read off of Janet, to be honest, other than her physicality. I found her a little boring.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's going to struggle to get far in the game at her age. I realize she's in excellent shape, but sleeping on bamboo every night is not kind to people over 40. And I think, like, I can see her. I can see her doing well on some of the challenges, but really not bringing anything else to the game. And I think she's going to struggle a bit to bond with these millennials, as you call them. So she's going to be bossing people around, and I think she's going to be an early boot. So I think the system is being way too kind to Janet here.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see her in the top three either.
No, I don't see her in the top 10, honestly. So.
Okay.
Ready for number two?
All right, so let's get to our first runner-up.
Is our surfer dude, Jack Nicting.
Okay, all right.
So this is the Aussie. This character type is the hippie, laid-back, long-haired bro.
System loves the surfers.
It does. Well, Survivor loves the surfers. The surfer dude has played more often than any other character type they've played in every single season. They've never skipped a surfer dude, which is not true of any other character type. So it's like a staple. So he's usually very athletic.
Who is the surfer dude on Borneo?
All right,
Dirk?
Who did I have as the surfer dude on Borneo? Oh my God, you caught me in a lie. Started in well, hold on. Australia. And
you have, but you have Mitchell Olsen as the surfer dude on yes. season two?
Yeah. Yep.
What?
I had Dirk as my pony boy in Borneo.
Where do you get Mitchell as a surfer?
I don't remember. I know that I went back and I made sure they were all right. He went out too early for me to remember.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
Plus, the do keep in mind that the character types kind of emerged slowly, so they didn't really start to gel till about Marquesas around there. So we're at 4 or 5 seasons in is when it really they really got their groove. Too.
Yeah.
So some of the early seasons are kind of like, what the hell is that?
Okay. Surfer
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, surfer dude. So. So this is interesting to note that it's the only character type that is in the top 5 for both placement rate and win rate. Mm-hmm. So he's the most likely to get to the end and the most likely to win once he gets there overall. However, he hasn't won since Tyson in Bloodwater, which was 11 seasons ago. So he tends to be used as allies for others to get to the end as opposed to having a real shot these days. That doesn't mean he doesn't have potential to do that. You even mentioned that Jack was the surfer dude when you were talking to Josh about this guy. So it's a pretty easy call.
Yeah. This was, you know, the system's always going to say this guy's going to go far. Makes sense. Can't argue with it. Not threatening. People should be threatened, but a likable guy, has a big smile. So
yeah, for the most part,
I mean, challenges.
I'm not hearing a lot of life experience coming through his interview. He comes across as a little entitled. Mm-hmm. And he says he's a Survivor fan, but then he forgot about it in college. So not so much then.
But. Yeah. Okay. All right. But let's get to our top story.
Yep.
Who is number one? I have not been crossing names off, so I have lost track of who it could be. I feel
that's
like that
the first time that's ever happened. Jiro is like, I know what you're going to say. I know who we're missing.
Well, I suspect it's going to be the know-it-all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So who's the know-it-all?
The know-it-all this season is Jason.
Our Jason,
injury lawyer from New York, New York.
Got it.
And the know-it-all is the Cesternino.
Well, of course, the winner of obviously.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be funny if I made this type to Spencer though? How mad would you be?
I wouldn't be angry.
Well, it's not the Spencer; it's the Cesternino.
I mean, the know-it-all's half the Steven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I could have made it the Fishback.
Yeah. So okay.
The reason why I make it the Cesternino is because I feel like you encapsulate the character type the best because you're strategic, but you're also that kind of charming, funny, sarcastic narrator character as well.
Who was it last season? Who was know-it-all last season?
I don't think there was one last season. Let me look and see. No, there wasn't one.
No, see, that was the problem.
Mm-hmm. No, they skip it often.
Mm-hmm.
They skip it. I mean, Christian was too much of a know-it-all. We needed to because who could follow Christian?
So he occupied that space for the whole year.
Yeah, he really did. So they needed to give it a little breathing room for the poor sod who comes next. So
okay, all right. So you feel like Jason is going to be the winner as per the system. Nicole did not think he would do well.
I think that he's got a really good chance. As a rap listener, as a Survivor super fan, as the only player to walk into the Wiggler interviewing, already knowing to keep his hands off the table because the mic will pick it up, using those exact words, because the mic will pick it up because he's heard Josh so many times, I think. Mm-hmm. And then he comes across and he's so charming and fun, but he has that edgier side as well. And, you know, he can lead, he can make tough decisions. And the strategy that he's going to use, I think, was really smart, too. Like calling it, you know, the way he talks about the game, he has such a deep, you know, resonating understanding of it, saying, you know, I'm not going to do anything first. It's a game of attrition. Mm-hmm. After the merge, you need to throw the strong people at each other. He has such a solid feel for it. So yeah. I can see him winning the whole thing for sure.
Okay.
It was really between Jason and Ronnie for me in my winner pick. And honestly, what swayed me is a know-it-all hasn't won in the last 12 seasons, but he's been the final three GOAT twice. So they do
who's
have a
the know-it-all? Who's the know-it-all? The one? Cochran?
Yeah.
Oh, Steven must love that. The Cochran's a know-it-all?
Mm-hmm. Well, what else is Cochran going to be? Come on. So, but he can't actually be a know-it-all because he won.
Mm, okay.
Ouch.
Sorry, Stephen.
Yeah, they can be too analytical and not put enough energy into their personal relationships. So we know that's where Spencer goes wrong. He thinks of everybody as a chess piece instead of a person, and he tries to make very logical pitches and arguments to people instead of emotional ones. So I'm not sure if Jason's going to be able to see the human side, and I think Ronnie as a very personable poker player, like all the poker players we've had before. And I don't mean Anna. I mean the guy poker players. They've been like arrogant douchebags. They really have. So, I mean, I really think that that Ronnie's going to bring something else to it. And while the Heisenberg hasn't won since Tony, only Dominic has been as smart as Ronnie, and he almost won. So, So I'm hedging my bets a little. Like, if it's not Ronnie, it's probably Jason.
But okay.
You can't have two winner picks.
All right. Angie, great work. The system seems to be on point.
We'll see.
We'll see. All right.
What else? I always get so nervous.
What are you nervous about?
I always get so nervous that I've completely misread something. Well, because too, like the players that are listening, there's more and more each year, which is really freaky. They've already played. So they already know if I'm full of shit. And they're like, oh, I can't wait to tell her how wrong she is. You know?
But then you say that's, well, I knew you were going to do good, but it was the system that I created that didn't think you were going to do good.
Yeah.
That's why you have plausible deniability on everything.
Yeah. No, I know. I know.
So
I do my best. It's, you know, you put yourself out there. The pre-game podcasts are always tough because there's so little to go on. At least I have a system backing me up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Angie, what else does the system tell you about these people? Anything?
No, that was it. Okay. I mean, there's so much. I mean, I had like 16 pages of notes this season. There's so many players. It's really ridiculous. So I don't want to bore everybody. Like, we've been here a while already.
Okay. All right. Well, Angie, what else are you up to these days? Anything that people would want to know about?
Not really.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just, have you been tweeting? Have you been following Big Brother?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay, don't want to talk about Big Brother.
I'm so sad about Big Brother. I'm just not, like, to come off of...
You've hinted at a Big Brother character type.
I have. It is a tremendous amount of TV to watch in order to put that together. Do you think that's something that people would want? Is it worth me doing?
I feel like that the Big Brother character types, honestly, I feel like would be much more practical. I feel like that with the Survivor characters, I think that there's more nuance in the Survivor casting, and I could knock the Big Brother casting a little bit here on a podcast, but I feel like that the Big Brother casting is very much a one for one of, okay, this is obviously the same exact guy as last season, and so that this is like clearly this archetype, this is and I think that Big Brother is almost like much more boilerplate in terms of like, okay, we have this person, we have this person, we have this person, and they have the same exact person almost every single season.
I would agree with that because I have like a rough outline of what the character types would be for Big Brother. And when I see people like Christy this year, I'm like, oh, she's like that character type, which is like that character type, you know, like the you can follow the line all the way back.
So I think that the Big Brother one, I think, might be shockingly accurate.
Do you have space in your like preseason content to do character types on Big Brother if we were to launch into this?
I don't want to. The thing is, it would be a quick turnaround where the Survivor. This was a quick turnaround for Survivor, and we had about 2.5 weeks to get ready. Less than that, even. I think that the cast came out on September 9th, and we're recording this today on September 23rd. So, but Big Brother, I mean, you basically have like a week from when the cast, or maybe 9 days from when the cast comes out to when the season starts. But
see, that's insane.
Yeah,
no, that's
but I think
quick.
That there would just be, you can look at the picture and say, okay, this is this guy, this is this girl. And then, I think you could do it in 10 minutes.
Well, if you're up for it, then I will double down and do it.
Because I think it would at least be fun to do it once, where the survivor one, you know, we have like so many different character types, and not everybody is necessarily like an exact match. I think you would have a lot of exact matches for Big Brother.
I like that the cast is smaller more consistently in Big Brother as well. That makes it more matched.
Right. And I think there would be like there are 16 character types, and they're the same every single season.
And over and
yeah,
over.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
It's like, oh, there, it's the old guy. That's the character type. Okay, the old guy typically does this. Yeah, and then, you know, I think it would be pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Okay, I'll do it.
I think you could do it. And honestly, I don't know necessarily like how far back you'd have to go. Like, I would start and go back to Big Brother 16. Like, I wouldn't even go back 20 seasons.
The problem is then I have no data to analyze how well they'll do. That's why I have to go
You would have 6 seasons.
Oh, you think that's enough? You think it's consistent enough?
Yes. I think that the older data, I think, is going to throw off your numbers.
Okay.
Like, how Jack Owens did in Big Brother 4 has no relevance on how the older player is going to do in Big Brother 22.
Okay.
The game is so different.
Well, I've been watching since around then, so I'm since 16, so that's totally
it's
doable.
It's a toe in the water, and then it's like, oh no, this is wacky, forget it.
I do worry, because Taryn is often going on about how they're making the competitions more physical, so that's changing the makeup of the game and the outcome and that kind of thing.
Okay, but so I definitely hear that from, you know, the seasons 10 years ago. But I mean, if you were just going back a couple of years, like I almost feel like that with the Survivor stuff, even like the stuff from the, you know, pre-Micronesia. I'm not sure necessarily how relevant that is with when we're basing it on the characters from modern day Survivor.
That would be an interesting experiment to do potentially for the next season, or as an extra tab in my shareable spreadsheet is like, if we cut out everything, you know, earlier than the last 10 seasons, how does that change the data and how does that change the results? And is that more accurate?
I think that would be really super interesting to get that information where it's like, okay, well, this person that all time, this person is coming in second, but based on from the last 10 seasons, this person is actually going to be a pre-merge boot.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure.
So, okay. Stuff for the future. We're always improving. Striving to.
It's nice when it's a little different each time as well, because it can get a little repetitive. I mean, luckily, everyone, like the stats change every year, because every year the players do different things and we have different winners. But for the most part, it's neat when there's kind of a new approach, for sure.
Okay. All right. Angie Kontz is on Twitter. She's at Angie Kontz. How about the Instagram? You have Instagram?
Not really. Okay. I'm not an Instagrammer.
Not an Instagrammer.
It's for the youngins. I embarrass my kids on Instagram.
Okay. All right.
They make me like delete photos. They're like, oh my God, mom, get rid of that.
Your photos or photos of them?
Mine. Yeah. Okay. I've had to like purge my Instagram because Ocean's like, why is it there? Like, I don't know.
All right. Well,
you know,
I could use that. That would be good.
Eating a meal. It's not a big deal. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Why do you have a unicorn on your Twitter? Is that in support of Nicole Anthony?
Yeah, because I love her. Mm-hmm. I love her. And you know what? I mean, I honestly don't think she's played a terrible game either. Like, I'm not one of those.
Yeah, who said she's played a terrible game?
Well, it's just you follow the hashtag for a whole season, you get a real sense of what the criticism is. And like, I was not a Fauté fan. Okay, like I like seeing strong alliances do well, but I also like to see likable people, and I happen to have found Tyler very likable. Don't at me, but
he's a likable guy.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, maybe I'm a bit of a casual that I'm just falling for the edit because I love Nicole and I love Tyler. But at the same time, it's just like this. I've never seen.
I mean, I don't think there's anybody that's like, hey, no, trust me. I watch the live feeds. Nicole's a real a-hole.
Yeah, no, I know. It's just that, oh, you like her because she's nice, not because she's a gamer, is what people will say. But I wanted to ask, because I haven't watched all the Big Brothers. Has there been a more disliked final group or final two, or, you know, like a major dominating alliance as there has been this season? Because I know there have been some seasons where people say, oh, they were really ugly people, but
I mean, I feel like that people really wanted Nicole here at the end. Sorry, Josh Wigler or anybody else that's a Survivor purist. We have some Big Brother here at the end. Big Brother finale is on Wednesday, too. So I don't know if, like, I wouldn't say that Holly is particularly unliked. I know that people are not happy that Jackson ended up, winning so much here down the stretch, and people really wanted Nicole, and some people really, would like to see Nicole and Cliff make it there to the end. So I don't know necessarily if this has been like all time in terms of Jackson. I'm trying to think just like historically, and I don't have the list in front of me.
I think,
but
someone on Twitter, I think, was saying Big Brother 6. That there hasn't been
The Maggie and Yvette getting down to the end. Well, again, it was so disappointing where you had Janelle, who was the fan favorite, who ends up coming in third in that season. And then I feel like that Big Brother 11, I think Jordan ends up winning that, but I feel like that people really did not like Natalie that she went up against in the final two. And, I feel like
I might just be biased by Twitter because, Big Brother Twitter really doesn't like Jackson and Holly for the most part. So maybe it's a whole different world in Facebook, apparently. And it's a world I don't go into for my Big Brother stuff. So,
yeah, I feel like that the casuals, I feel like, do not detest Jackson in the way that social media does.
Yeah, maybe.
Sometimes what I've noticed, there are stronger opinions on Twitter than there are in real life.
He is not getting a stellar edit, though. Like, they've really, like, I think it could have been a lot worse, but I'm glad that they showed some of his more disturbing behavior in the edit.
So, but I suspect if most people just talk to, their casual parents about, like, I don't know if they would be overly negative about Jackson.
My father, I always use as my casual barometer, and I asked him about halfway through the season. He hates Jackson.
What about now? I'd be interested to know if he's come around on him at all.
Yeah, maybe I should ask. I just haven't been talking to anyone about it. Something really funny happened with the hashtag. Speaking of casuals, there, I think this morning or yesterday, We Love You Jackson was trending in the US.
I tweeted about this today. This was a very confusing morning for BB21 fans when We Love You Jackson. Apparently, there was
all these Jackson and fans came out of the woodwork and is like, yes, see? And I'm like, maybe try clicking on it.
Is trending on Instagram. No, apparently there's a K-pop star, Jackson, and he was down.
He's far more popular than...
Very popular, but he was having a rough go. People wanted to support that Jackson, but that's why, also known as Mickey. If it was We Love You Mickey, then it would be less confusing.
Yeah, well, that's why Julie Chenzo was pointing it out, not to be confused with Jackson.
Please
K-pop
don't drag us that we talked about Big Brother at the end of the Survivor podcast. Please,
you can leave at any time. We're done. It's over.
No, I know people like to listen to the end. And I get that, but please don't. I don't like when I get dragged on Twitter.
No, I talk about Big Brother like exactly once a year with Rob, and this is it. So.
This was it. Okay. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Of course, we've got an incredible lineup coming up this week, where on Wednesday night, we're going to get you started with the Survivor Know-It-Alls following the first episode of Survivor Island of the Idols. If that's your thing, you can join Stephen Fishback and the Heisenberg himself, Dominic Abate,
woo!
At 9:45 p.m. Eastern time for a recap of the Survivor premiere. Then, if you are so inclined, you can join Brent Wolgamont and our panel of experts to break down the Big Brother 21 results. Taryn Armstrong and I are going to be headed to the Big Brother backyard to get interviews with the Big Brother cast. And then Taryn and myself on Thursday will talk about the Survivor episode. So we will have my first chance to talk about the Survivor episode. It's going to be on Thursday when I will talk about it with Taryn, talk about everything from the episode. And then on Friday, I will have my first Survivor interview of the season when I will speak with last season's superstar, Reem Daly, will join me on the podcast on Friday. And then be on the lookout for the Wiggle Room, the Wand Off with Jordan Kalish this week in Survivor. That's all going to be one podcast this season.
I can't wait for the Wand Off to start again. Toby is obsessed with the Wand Off, I must say. So he's just always like, must listen. He always makes us listen to all the songs in the car. Not makes us. We want to, of course.
Yep.
But yeah,
big week. No, big week coming up. So awesome. Lots of stuff to check out. Of course, all made possible by the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. It's a great time to come on over and see everything we have going on in our Rob Has a Podcast patron Facebook community, our patron only podcast feed, and much more, all waiting for you at robiswebsite.com/patron. Angie, thank you so much for all your hard work. Thank you guys for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.